Remember, California State Polytechnic College, San Luis Obispo, brings you the recollections and impressions of another of the distinguished retired faculty members. This one is MC Marty Martinson. Marty, what was your first contact with Cal Poly? I know it was a long time ago.
Well, I arrived on this campus in October of 1913 and signed up then as a freshman in what was to be the first four-year courses to be offered at Cal Poly. Heretofore, the courses had only been of three-year duration.
What course did you enter in?
It was called at that time Mechanics Engineering, which included, of course, machine shop practice, carpentry, welding, hydraulics, surveying or civil engineering portions of it, electrical work, and almost all of the things that you can think of that would be of interest to a man in the field of mechanics or engineering.
And at that time, Marty, most of the buildings that were on the campus were pretty much the original buildings with which the institution started in 1903. Is that right?
There were a number of new buildings built between 1903 and 1912. The dual dormitory, for one, the boys' dormitory was called at that time, was one of the last buildings built there. So there are 17 buildings altogether in the campus in 1913. But many of those had been built in 1908, 1909, and so forth.
And quite a number of those were the shop and laboratory buildings.
That's right. The carpenter shop, the welding shop, the machine shop, creamery, the dairy building, or dairy barn. Those were all the shop buildings. And the other buildings were classroom buildings in the three main buildings on the campus.
If I remember history correctly, was the building that's still remaining of the old group, which is called Agricultural Education, was that built as part of the first three buildings?
That is right. The first one was the administration building. The second one was the boys' dormitory. Those two buildings, of course, were torn down and made way for the building that was for a number of years used as administration building. The Ag Ed building, as you call it, was the last of the three to be built, about 1904, or in that era.
And really that is perhaps the most historic building that is still left on the campus.
That is right.
What was for many years the dining hall, was that built when you were a freshman?
No, that was built about 1910 or 1911.
But it was there when you
but
came.
But it was there when I came, that's mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. And it was used as a dining hall for quite a number of years, used until about in the 1930s.
How big was the enrollment when you came here in 1913?
The enrollment that time would probably be not more than 150 students. The freshman class of 1913 was the largest class that had ever enrolled there, about 76 students.
And did these students come from pretty well all over the state?
All over the state, that's right.
And at that time, of course, this Cal Poly was a high school and was the only technical high school which was serving on a statewide level. Is that
true? That's right.
And who was the president when you were here as a freshman?
Yeah, Leroy B. Smith was the president, and Edwards was the vice president.
And was Smith the first or second president?
I believe he was the second. I believe the first president was Anderson.
Leroy Anderson.
Leroy Anderson, that's mm-hmm. right.
And do you remember some of your instructors?
Yes, A.D. King was the mathematics instructor, wonderful man. I came to Cal Poly 7 weeks late. I had been working in Santa Barbara, and when I came here, I had 7 weeks' work to pick up. And that man helped me into mathematics again and got me lined up by Christmas time so that I passed the examinations with the balance of the class. The other man was an instructor was Mr. York, who was a science instructor, chemistry and physics. C.A. Binns was our electrical instructor and surveying, that sort of thing. And then there was, of course, Figge came on the scene about that time. I didn't have him as an instructor, however, but I did work for him, and now and then his shop. Then there was Oscar Leslie Heald, who was then machine shop instructor. And Jewett Johnston was the carpentry instructor. All of them very practical men give us a very practical background in all those fields.
Now, did you look around fairly soon for some campus employment that would help you get through school?
Yes. Having earned my journeyman's card in electrical work in Santa Barbara prior to coming to Cal Poly, I had a lot of experience in working with engines, motors, and that sort of thing, and I qualified in my second year here as the relief operator in the power plant. At that time, of course, we were not hooked up to the PG&E as we are today. We generated all of our power on campus for shops as well as lights in the dormitories. In 1915, I took the job as a regular operator and operated then until I graduated in June of 1917.
Who was in charge of the heat and power and so on then?
A fellow by the name of Meck, Oliver Meck, was the power plant engineer. Johnny Perosi, by the way, was also his assistant from about 1914, and I think until 1942 or whenever he retired.
Well, real good, and Johnny Perosi is going to be one of the voices on this series of As I Remember. Marty, did you have inter-school athletics at that time?
That's right. I didn't qualify for baseball. I was too old, but I did play football for the 4 years that I was here. The first 2 years was rugby, rather a rough game, and then it was 2 years of American football.
And what schools did you play?
Oh, Santa Barbara, Bakersfield. Those are the two principal schools that we were...
You didn't play against San Luis Obispo High School?
Not that I recall.
Was there kind of a gentleman's agreement at that time that didn't want rivalry with two schools?
Evidently, it was something of that sort. We did play baseball, I believe, with them, but no football.
No football. Mm-hmm. And you went then the full 4 years and graduated in 1917, and your goal at that time was to go into what line of work?
Go back into the electrical work in Santa Barbara, as my brother did in 1920 after he graduated. He was a member of the class of 20, and he hasn't been in business for himself since 1920. But I saw fit to go into the automotive and airplane field instead.
Well, Marty, when you got out of school, I imagine the first thing you did then was to look for a job, and who did you go to work for right away?
I was fortunate in the job situation. About 3 weeks before graduation, the Union Oil Company foreman at Avila tried to proposition me to quit school and come out and go to work for him as steam engineer. I refused. I told him that if he'd hold a job for me until after June 6th, that I'd be tickled to death to go to work for them, and so I did. Worked for them for about 3 or 4 months. In the meantime, my brother had been drafted, and I figured one draft in the family is enough, so I enlisted in the engineers and was shipped to Camp Meade, Maryland, where we trained for about 5 or 6 months, and I was shipped overseas and spent a little over a year in France. 7 months of that time in front lines. And I was then, at that time, well, in France, by the way, I was also mechanic in the motor detail. There were two of us, and we maintained all of our equipment. We had 14 pieces of equipment to maintain, and the two of us maintained that equipment during the 2 years that we were in the service.
Now, did you have any contact with aviation while you were in the service?
No, just I stayed clear of it. Met one of our Cal Poly boys in Issoudun, France, and he was in the Air Corps, grounded, of course, because he had mechanical experience. I told him I'd already made application to the Signal Corps. He says, forget it. He says, don't come over here in the Air Corps because you'll be a mechanic on the ground too and you'll never get to fly. So I stayed with my own outfit, the 27th Engineers, all during the war in France.
Mm-hmm. Then after you came back, you had various employment in automotive and electrical fields and so on. And then along the line, you had some contact with airplanes, I know.
That's right. When I came back to this country and was discharged in San Francisco, I was walking down Market Street and met one of my old professors from Cal Poly, Chauncey T. Kiefer, who was drafting instructor here at that time I was a student. and he propositioned me to go to work for C.F. Braun and Company, a classmate of his from Stanford. So I did, and I worked there for 7 months until a big strike came along, and I then had to quit, of course. And I went back to Santa Barbara and went into electrical work again. Worked at that for about a year, and then decided that I wanted to go into the automotive and airplane field. And that was the beginning of it, about 1921, of the automotive and airplane work. Worked for the Overland Company for 3 years as foreman, and worked for the Studebaker Company for about 3 years as their foreman, and then went into business for myself from 1925 until 1929. I sold out my partnership to two gentlemen that took over. In fact, both of them were partners of mine at the time. And I came to Cal Poly then in 1930 as an assistant to the man who had charge of the aeronautics work here at Cal Poly at that time.
Now, what was the aeronautics field, what did it consist of at that time? What was the emphasis on?
The emphasis at that time was on maintenance, the maintenance type of engineering. We designed, would redesign oftentimes fittings. In fact, we also built three airplanes at Cal Poly and were flown successfully for a number of years. The first one was called the Glenmont. It was built by Mr. Warren and Johnny Montillo, who was his assistant. And in 1930, I was assistant to Mr. Warren, and we then built a biplane. But oh, wait a minute, we built my own job first. We built another cabin job, and I flew that for 6 years, very satisfactorily. And the third plane was a biplane. It was built for a couple of grads of Cal Poly, Burton Bundy being one of them, and Harold Cole, the other one, those two boys. And that flew successfully for quite a number of years. I think it was flown for about 5 years, and then the wind broke it loose one day and rolled it over into a ditch, and that was the end of that job.
Well, that department was quite popular here at the college, and the interest in aviation, of course, was growing all over the country then.
That's right.
And you had students coming in from a wide area.
Well, all over the state. In other words, students from all over the state, and of course, then we had graduates then from 1930 until 1941, and those boys traveled all over the world. We had students in every field of aviation throughout the world during World War II.
And the real good basic instruction that they had here at San Luis Obispo certainly ensured them immediate opportunities and a chance to go a long ways, and this was particularly important prior to World War II when so much greater emphasis was on airplanes and in World War I, isn't that true?
That's right. Many of the boys would, took up flying and won their wings and did a lot of brilliant flying in both pursuit jobs and in the bombers during World War II.
Now, where and how did you get your flight instruction?
I started flying before I came to Cal Poly, about 1928 and 29. I started taking lessons from some friends of mine in Santa Barbara. So by the time I came to Cal Poly, I already had the flight ticket, which naturally helped out along with the mechanics ticket that I already held.
Now, Marty, at the time you came here, the aeronautics division had a shop of their own. Could you tell us about where it would be located in relation to some of the present buildings on the campus?
Yes. The Cal Poly Aero Department was located just across the street from the east end of what is now called Engineering West. And the building then would lie between that and the electronics and electrical building, and to the north of the graphics building, or whatever they call that building there. What is it?
In other words, it's to be about where that small parking lot is.
Small
there,
parking lot, exactly.
Which would be to the north of the graphic arts building.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And as I recall, that was a very busy place, and it also was a place that many people visited when they came here, because college instruction in the aeronautics field was quite rare at that
That's
time.
Right.
Is that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And the classes that we had there at that time were about the largest classes of any of the departments on the campus. It hadn't been for, I feel that it hadn't been for the aeronautics department and the large number of students that we had there, that Cal Poly might have shut its doors about 1933.
During those years, too, wasn't it the practice of the Aeronautics Department to take planes that someone owned and wanted to have alterations or repairs made on them, and they would bring them in as a laboratory project?
That is right. After the first 2 years, we built the three planes I mentioned previously. After that, we took only jobs that were so badly wrecked that no commercial operator would take them to repair them. But we'd take them in here and redesign fittings and rebuild them and have them recertificated by the Aeronautics Board in Washington, D.C., and they'd go back into service again. Better ships than they were when they were new, I feel.
Now, there was a very famous aviatrix, though, whose plane was being worked on here at a kind of a historic moment. Isn't that true?
Well, the plane that we were working on belonged to Paul Mance, who was the technical advisor to Amelia Earhart. We never worked on Amelia Earhart's plane as such, but we did work on Paul Mance's plane, and he was the technical advisor to her before she took her last flight.
Well, she flew that plane of Paul Mance's, though, didn't she?
Oh, yes.
But that was not the plane that
she was
using when she disappeared.
The plane she flew was a Lockheed, and the one that we rebuilt here was a Boeing.
And she was a very remarkable woman, as I remember.
Very much so.
I had a very slight contact with her, but I'm sure that you did in your work there.
She was a wonderful woman. It's too bad that she had to end up the way that she did.
Now, as World War II was approaching and plane design, emphasis on speed, on bombers, on extremely fast pursuit planes, did Cal Poly give a greater emphasis then to engines and the new engines than it perhaps had in the early days?
That is right. We naturally picked up as many of the jet type of engines as we could so that the boys would have not only practice on the old propeller type reciprocating engines, but also on the jet engines.
And you had a man here then that was quite a character and was certainly tops in the engine field. Who was that?
That is right. That was Roy Metz. I picked him up from Pan American Airways in 1937. He did a marvelous job in the engine laboratory.
And as I recall it, you had a very fine set of engines of all the different types, from very old to the most modern that you could get.
We were told by the officers from the material division in Dayton, Ohio, that we had one of the nicest, or one of the best, museums in old engines that was to be found anywhere.
And
unfortunately, that is not true today. The engines have long since been wrecked or sold, or I don't know just where they've gone.
Something's happened to them.
Something's happened to them, at least.
Today's jets were your biggest planes. You'd have great difficulty getting them to into some of the buildings, isn't
that right?
They're so immense. Now, during World War II, the college maintained a program for civilians, and did you maintain the work in aeronautics all through that time?
That is right. We had the Navy program on here in 1943 until 1946, and we maintained the aeronautics department staff. There's only one or two of us there most of the time, but we did have students that were naturally not in the draft or in the service. So we had to give them the same type of training that we'd been giving previously to the larger classes. So some of my very good students graduated in the class of 1946 that did not see service until after they graduated from school. Some of them didn't even see service then.
Did you do any teaching in the Navy program yourself?
Yes, I taught navigation for quite some time. I don't recall exactly, for near a year, I believe, something like that.
And as a matter of fact, the Navy flight preparatory program that we had in operation was a godsend in the way of being able to keep a staff here. They may have taught something that was quite foreign to what they started in, but between mathematics and navigation and some physics and so on, most of the civilian staff was continued to be employed here at
Cal
Poly.
They were indoctrinated into the courses that were the Navy had sent men out here to train these people, and naturally I had been teaching navigation previously, didn't have much of a problem, but there were others again with mathematics background and physics background, so there was no problem for them either with a little review work.
So as a result of this, then, when the war was over, it was possible to start beginning with bigger civilian enrollment without having to go out and recruit a total new staff. The nucleus of the staff was here.
It was already here, that's right.
And then in 1946 and from then on, the total program at Cal Poly, and this is especially true in the engineering fields, began to boom tremendously in great numbers of students. What would you attribute this to particularly?
Well, I believe that a lot of the students that had been in service began to realize that they had to have some more training and more background to compete in the industrial field. If they had only a high school education, it would be quite hard for them to pick or choose the type of work that they'd like to do, not having had any previous training or background for the technical fields that were being opened to them at that time.
Well, not only did the older students come back, but hadn't they indoctrinated hundreds and hundreds of their buddies around the world?
That's right. And there was many of the students came back after with a three-year background and wanted to pick up their degree, and so they did. And these boys had contacted any number of men in their travels over the world with the Army or with the military services. And these men also came back to Cal Poly. So naturally, we had a large influx of people that had heard about Cal Poly in their travels over the world during the war years.
And would it be true, too, that someone at the college did an extremely good job of placing information about Cal Poly in these Army separation centers and military separation centers?
Yes. Well, there was another thing that helped out a lot. We had an alumni newsletter that was sent out to all of our men throughout the world. And I imagine there were a lot of men that read these after our students had gone through them and probably answered some of the letters or some of the questions that the school asked at that time or other students were asking.
And certainly the GI Bill of Rights, which gave college expense money to the veterans, had a big share in this too.
That's right.
But then, Marty, up until we're pretty well up to about 1950, now, during the next several years, what other changes were made? Were there things in buildings and new buildings and so on that you were interested and concerned with?
Yes. We, for instance, during the 1946-47, we contacted the Army here at Camp San Luis. There was a group of men that had been all through the war in France and Germany, and they were taking some equipment training out here. So I talked to the colonel and showed him a problem that I had over here at school, and I said, why not bring your men over here and give them something where they can learn to use the equipment, dump the dirt into a hole and leave it there and tamp it down instead of shoving it into a hole and digging the hole out again. So the Army did. They came over here and they moved some 52,000 yards of dirt for us. It didn't cost the state a dime. All that we had to pay to get the drainage taken care of was about $200 or $300 for some tile that had to naturally go underneath the runway. After that, then the hangar was built.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's go back here. What happened? What was all the purpose of all this earth moving?
Well, it was that was our flight strip.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that became our flight strip. Flight strip about 3,000 feet long and about 200 feet wide. And it's still open for use today. But not used as much as it was during the time that we had the maintenance engineering and that sort of thing, where we were rebuilding planes and naturally taking them out and testing them and bringing them back in again for further service or changes or whatever might be necessary.
How about this hangar?
The hangar came in about 1946-47. And there again, we had to move some 30,000 yards of dirt or fill. But the fill dirt was put in after the hangar was built upon concrete piers. The concrete piers, some of them in the back of the building, were 15 feet tall. But they were down to solid rock. So when that was all done, we hauled in 30,000 yards of dirt and filled in around the piers and also around the building to give us Space for plane storage of planes and storage of other equipment.
Now, was that hangar, did that come from materials which had been war surplus?
The material was new material, but the company in Oakland had a large supply of the material on hand and were a little bit concerned about the use of it. And they were just tickled to death to give us a bid on the building that we had designed here and that had been okayed by the State Department of Architecture. And naturally, it was a building much cheaper than we could have built in case they just didn't have this surplus material to work with.
Marty, how long after the hangar was built was the aeronautics laboratory and instruction moved up there? Was it quite a while after that?
No, the instruction, the aeronautics end of, not the engine end of it, but the structural end of the aeronautics department was moved up there about 1947 and has continued to operate out of that building since that time.
But the other building
the
is,
other
is
building
primarily
was,
the engine building.
The other building is an engine building and the laboratory building for the other aeronautical sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And then the engine department, that was moved up there about 50 or 51, somewhere along in there, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. And have there been any major changes with your knowledge since those buildings have come in there? Have there been changes in emphasis or?
Yes,
what?
Markedly so. The emphasis now is more or less to design engineering, at least away from the technological type of training that was being given there prior to 1954 or 1955.
The students can get basic instruction in the principles of jet propulsion and jet engines and so on, can they?
In a limited way, I imagine they can. I haven't checked up on their recent engine curricula, so I'm not too familiar with the program at the present time.
Marty, can you think of the names of some boys, graduates from here, that you had contact with over the years that are among the representatives of hundreds and hundreds of Cal Poly graduates who are making good in the aircraft business over the world?
Yes, I think I can, George. The first man that comes to mind is Tom Leonard, who graduated in 1946 and went to work for Pan American Airways and later went down to San Jose State and started working, setting up the aeronautics department there. He's today head of that department and doing a very marvelous job in the field of education for the aeronautical industries. Another man is Paul Pitt. He's is a vice president of Solar Aircraft in San Diego in charge of research and is doing a marvelous job there with the help of a number of Cal Poly students in his department or division. Another man that comes to mind is Tony Stamm that works for Pan American Airways in San Francisco. And Bill Lincoln, who has been a flight engineer with Pan American for quite a number of years. Another man in another field again is Walter Whittier, who was with Convair in a cost estimating group that was set up quite a number of years ago and doing a marvelous job there.
And these fellows would be quite representative of just hundreds of aeronautics graduates that are working all over the world.
Well, I think this is a good cross-section of the type of student that has left Cal Poly and gone into industry and would be representative of the many students that have graduated in aeronautics in the years subsequent to the graduation of these men.
Marty, what year was it that you retired with great honors here at Cal Poly, and then what did you do after that?
Well, I graduated in 1917, but I retired from the instructional staff in July of 1957, after 27 years work there in the instruction field. Marion and I got on a Norwegian freighter in San Francisco and took off for Europe almost immediately after my retirement in July. And we spent a year and a half over there, traveling some 25,000 miles in a little Volkswagen. spent 3 months or better in the Scandinavian countries. We were about 3 months in Spain. And we spent a bit of our time in Germany, also in England, Scotland, and Ireland. 6 weeks over there. The whole time we were there, it rained, so we got back all on the continent again to get into some decent weather. Then we also spent some time in Switzerland, down in Italy, and in France. In fact, I took Marion back over the old battlefields of 1917, 1918. She was willing to bet me that I wouldn't find any of the places. I told her I bet I'd find the houses and manure piles exactly where I left them in 1919. And so I did. After a year and a half there, we came back to California, and I was talked into going to work again in Santa Barbara. And for 3.5 years, I worked as a building inspector for a finance corporation there that was having difficulties with some of the buildings that they were financing because of the poor concrete work and other, and poor mechanics, of course, was one of the main reasons for the difficulty. And then after that, we came back to Cal Poly again and figured we'd clean up the house and sell it. In fact, we came back here and cleaned up the house, and we're still living here, and we're not going to move from San Luis Obispo. This is it.
And you have many hobbies, I know, and trailer, and you like to travel around and still see things, enjoy a very active life.
That's right. I travel too much in the trailer. I don't get time enough at home to take care of all the work that I have here. Been trying to clean the place up for the last 3 years here, and I still haven't planted a garden.
Well, the work will still be there when you come home.
Oh, yeah.
It'll make a difference where you go.
That's right.
Well, Marty, it's been a great pleasure talking to you and getting your recollections on this program, which is called As I Remember, and this tape will go into the archives and will be available through the library to people in years to come. And you just can't tell but what some of these students that you've been talking about will come back here someday and they'll just want to hear Marty Martinson's voice. This program has been, the interview has been conducted by George P. Cooper.